mining investors, which are retail American centric, whereas the metal investors that are buying, they're from the Indias, from the Chinas, from the Russians. And so they're a different set of buyers. So eventually we'll converge when mining companies start delivering profit and dividends. So that will have to call for $2,800 gold and around, $40-$50 silver. That's when the buyer, if you want to see, you know what, John, where am I going to see First Majestic go back to 27, right? You're going to see $40-$50 silver. And when is the Barricks and Newmont's going to challenge this whole time high? You're going to see $2,800 gold.
Good morning, John. How are you? Or I should say good afternoon to you where you're at. How are you?
Doing fine. How are you?
Doing well. As I was saying just off camera, I had you on about a week ago and you talked about how bonds will start. You're very negative on bonds and the bond yields will start exploding. And obviously that means the bond price is going down and that's exactly what's happening. Talk to me about that. What's going on? And let's start working that out.
We haven't seen nothing yet. When I came on the show, I said we've been waiting for the moment. It's a high confidence trade. The 10-year was about 109.5, and now it is just under 108. So it's corrected about 2%. But yield-wise, 10-year was sitting on 4.4, 4.3, which is a 200-day, strong 200-day support. Now, just in a week, it's gone from 4.3 to about 4.7. So that is a sizable move in the bond, in the yield, in the world of the bond, in the bond yield world. It right. hasn't broken down yet to the lows. That was, I recall, about 8 months ago. So and the 2-year are still just an inch below 5%, which is a very, very strong resistance level. It's a matter of time. And usually when things move, they can move quite quickly. And I would not be surprised if the 2-year takes out 5% and the 10-year is going to zoom past 5% and the inverted yield curve will resume normalcy, because in an inflationary environment, Andy, people would demand higher interest to park their money longer term. So this anomaly will have to be resolved either through lower short-term interest rate or much higher long-term interest rates. And as you said, and you know my stance on that, which is the latter. Soon enough, I don't think there's really any discussion about, well, there's still a muted discussion, but it's almost the interest rate cut crowds are just giving up hope. And I don't see a rate cut now on the horizon. If anything, you'll be looking at a rate hike probably right after the election. And it appears that Jay Powell is sort of losing confidence with the crowd. And I would not be surprised, regardless of which president that gets elected, that Jay's days are somewhat numbered. And the prime candidate is this Neo Kalikari guy out of Minnesota Fair. That's just, that's another bit of a crony. I remember 3 years ago, they said the interest rate is still staying definitely low. We can have a ban that interest rate can, inflation can tip above, slight bit, it's okay, it's transitory. But now he's the one that's saying, oh, we're going to see months of positive low inflation data before I contemplate an interest rate cut. So he's probably the prime candidate, because he does what people tell him. He does what the boss tells him to say and to do. So that's my prognosis.
Yeah. So the yield curve flattening or going back to normal, that's interesting to me, because we both know that an inverted yield curve signals recession. When it starts to flatten out to go back to normal, what exactly does that mean? Does that mean that a recession is imminent, or does that mean we're in recession and going to be coming out? Talk to me about that.
I don't know who conjured up the idea that an inverted yield curve signals recession. I don't think there's empirical evidence that points to that. As I said, what we've been told in the last 40 years is things have changed. The paradox is broken. You had a declining interest rate from 1980 up to 2020. So that is a 20-year bull market on the treasury, and there's a 40-year bear market on interest rates. And now the interest rates is heading up on both the short and the long. And I don't read too much into the recession. Like, what is the definition of recession? Okay, it's a GDP. How do you calculate consecutive negative growth of GDP? GDP in itself has all the different elements. This is economics, and I talked to on the show that, you know, I think by many aspects of it, the economy could never be in recession. And let's talk about the Chinese calculation of GDP. That's entirely different matter. So I don't read too much about whether we're in recession or not in recession, but rather what you look at is the equity prices, interest rates, where the dollar is.
Got it. Okay. So then with bond yields climbing, that's not good for stocks. Talk to me about that.
You're right that bonds and stocks are competing for your capital. So in a normal scenario, which we're not in, if the dollar is finite, it has to choose between bonds and stocks, and if the risk-free rate is 5%, then stocks have to offer dividends in excess of 5% in order to attract investors. When I was talking about on your show last time, there is a caveat, which is there are some people that don't play by the rules. And what I mean by that is they control the printing press. So either you say that, either in a gentler way, you can say they bought quote unquote borrow money, of which they basically, it's a journal entry with the asset liabilities. So they take money and they're buying S&P in hundreds of billions of dollars on a daily basis, either through the disguise of ETFs from the Vanguards and the Black Rocks and State Street, or through what they call the plunge protection team, which has been talked about for a long time. And these are not small fry quantities. You're talking hundreds of billions of dollars, tens of billions, hundreds of billions on a daily basis, just through the volume that I track through sort of the futures that have been traded on critical support level, right? It just, or that's a general way to put it, kosher way to put it, and on a more blatant way to put it, they literally just print and they're buying. And so, you know, this is not different from what's happening in Turkey. Like when Erdogan was elected president about 6-7 years ago, the Turkish lira has gone from, like, I believe it's around 5 euro, 10 euro at the time, and now it's 30 lira. And people say, well, you know, we struggle to control inflation. We should raise interest rates to dampen inflation, and inflation is running crazy. Inflation is the result of money printing. So in the case of Turkey, is they are literally printing lira to the politicians and the back door. They're just printing with abandon and buying assets, right? Buying apartments in New York, buying precious stones, buying precious metal, buying real estate, buying stocks, buying airplanes. And all these things are denominated in US dollars. And that's why you're seeing the devaluation of the lira, because that's the only thing they can print. So the guys are controlling the printing price. Well, they control the US dollar. They're raising interest rates and then they're jacking up the dollar because it's a below discussion, Andy, but they are also controlling, the ones controlling the Fed are controlling the BOJs, ECBs, and BOCs. So they are, in my view, the Bank of Canada, Bank of Japan, and, well, not so much Bank of Japan, Bank of Canada and ECB and BOE are literally printing their national currencies to buy the dollar, to prop up the dollar. while so that, and then, and the Fed is raising interest rates so that they can have a stronger dollar as a backdrop while they're printing to buy S&P 500. We talked about the King analogy, which you guys can refer to in the last interview. So the end result is these guys are not playing by the book, meaning that if the interest rate is at 5% and the NASDAQ is and S&P are breaking an all-time high, 10% is not going to deter them from continuing to buy because they don't play by the rules, right?
Right.
And it's, okay, you got to pay 10% interest a year on your $3 trillion of debt. Okay, it's fine. Let's just borrow another $200 billion to pay. So this idea of debt implosion, debt coming home to roost, it's only applicable to the
play by the rules.
The other guys. And that's why I am not bearish of the equity market. You might see engineered correction just to cool down the temperature, but the direction of the equity is up. How do I know that? Every time I short it, in practicality, every time I short, I lose money. So if something is afoot, I cannot explain why. And that's the only reason I can come with. Having stocks go up in a rising interest rate environment, in tepid economic growth, in times of war, and in divisions of the two largest economies in the world, and Apple is still trading, you know, trillions of dollars, and just that's the only conclusion I can come. These people that are buying are not buying to make money. They're buying for control and for influence.
Yeah. You know, I'm very sympathetic to that view. And the reason, especially right now, we got an election coming up, and it's just hard for me to see the stock market tank, the S&P tank with an election coming up. But I guess what's really interesting is this whole dynamic with not only stocks, but with the dollar and the bond market, which you've alluded to. I had Simon Hunt, I don't know if you're familiar with him and his work on about two weeks ago. And he's talking similar to what you're talking about, but really the question is, and he said, this is the question, do they pick the dollar or do they pick the bond market on what to save? And they can't pick both. And it looks like...
Meaning... What does it mean, pick?
Pick, well, okay, so you can't, how are you going to prop up the bond market and how are you going to prop up the dollar at the same time? I mean, because one, you'd have to, it's either or, right? Because you'd be printing money to buy bonds or stocks. So there, the dollar would decrease, right? Or you're going to jack up interest rates to attract either domestic or foreign buyers of US dollars because the interest rate is high. So which one are you going to pick?
And well, so certainly it's easier. There's a loose correlation, but it's a correlation between the dollar and the yields will not go negative because the higher, because the yields are high. Certainly a lot easier to prop up the dollar if the interest rates are high.
Because
it's incentive to buy.
Right.
Couple of things. The politics are so polarized in the United States that people who don't like the Republic, they will vote for Democrats even if they're hungry going on the street. And so the narrative is that politicians, like I said, the politics is so polarized that they can still get away with just talking points rather than some concrete actions to prop up the economy. On the dollar and the bonds, and that's one that conversation I actually wrote here, is I want to share with you how the market works. Let's talk the dollar. The dollar index is very, very easy to work with because it's synthetic. When you talk about the dollar index, it's a basket of currencies. And as I mentioned to you, the guys behind the dollar is the same that's driving all the central banks. So to prop up the dollars is very simple. Just have the Fed come in talking about potentially, you know, that inflation are persisting and the chance of rates cutting is being shelved, create that expectation there may be rate hikes to crowd the people into the dollar rally. And then they just need to nudge through the futures market ask all the other central banks to print their national currencies to buy the dollar. That's all you need to do on a temporary basis and on a long-term basis. And secondly, on the yield, so how do you calibrate the treasury market by the managers? That's even easier. If you want the yield to go up, you can do what they call the quantitative easing, which is what the Fed has been doing from 2010 to 2020. If the government is running a deficit and it's nobody bidding the bonds, which means the yield need to go up, the bond prices need to go lower, and then the guys which make the bond cheaper, right, to entice investors. And if the government's agenda at that time is to continue the debt binge to try to maximize the opioid dosage to try to hook down debt, then they will just monetize the debt. The Fed can buy it. So the Fed has got hundreds of billions, maybe trillions. So that's how you prop up the treasury. And if they want to smash the treasury, you can drain liquidity two ways, the opposite. So the government, it's easy. The government just do deficit spending, right? Continue to issue bonds to drain liquidity from the market. When I say drain liquidity, is once your money, your dollars, your money, your deposit is exchanged for bonds, then your money is parked. So that is liquidity taken out of the market. So the government, just as yesterday, the government had a very low interest in 5-year bond treasury auction. And that's what caused the treasury prices to go down, interest rate to spike. Again, it's engineered, Andy, because if the government wanted low interest rates and low interest rate to stimulate the economy, they could have easily done that by calling the Fed to come in and monetize the debt.
Right.
To put the easing. But as I mentioned, one more time, the era of low interest is over. It is one of the very few occasions where what the government wants, the manager wants, the action, the action that the government wants, and the fundamentals of the market is aligned in the treasury, which is they want the treasury to go down. They want the interest to go up so that you could own nothing and be happy. And the Fed, if you to watch the language, is scaling back. They have all stopped in purchasing bonds. They're selling their bonds. That's what they're holding. So what's happening, what that means is the Fed is also helping the government in draining liquidity, draining the money, draining deposit from the market, from the ordinary people, because when the Fed is selling the bonds, you end up with holding a paper, right? And your money is gone to the Fed. The Fed will just disappear, will just be buried. That's just the asset of the Fed. So as I mentioned to you, the difference between lowering precious metals and shorting treasury, fundamentally, you're the right track because the treasury is worth zero at the end of the day. They're not worth anything. And similarly, the metals should be a lot higher. But the difference I favor treasury over the metals is the metals, the UN cartels are the opposite ends, right? The cartel all the prices go down. Whereas in treasury now, the cartels and the fundamental both will dictate lower interest, a higher interest and lower treasury. And that's what I'm saying, that the yield's gonna go a lot higher and treasury hasn't crashed yet. When the 2-year, if you track pick over 5%, that's when hell is going to break loose. You're just going to see that 10-year zoom past 5% to 6%. So that will represent probably a 10 to 20% correction in the yields. And that will be a big, big deal. Really funny is I don't watch a lot of television anymore because that just crowd your judgment, right? But you're still seeing the economists. They're the worst bunch, right? They're reading. They're just, we don't know. We have to wait until the next time the inflation number come out to see whether it's going to be a rate hike or economy. There may be recession, maybe not. This is just storytelling. And there's been plenty of times the Fed come in, even the CPI number, right? Like they cannot control our day to day, but they would revise upward or downward. So all of this is hogwash. And you have the guys I used to listen to as gospel, the like of Double Line Capital, Jeffrey Gundlach, right? He's talking about all these fancy chartings and numbers and in leading and lagging indicators. He's saying there's going to be 2 rate cuts this year on CNBC. Just deadly wrong. And as I said, I'm very clear, a very, very strong conviction. You were saying.
Yeah. Well, okay. So you alluded to that, to what I'm about to ask is what does this mean for my listeners? What does this mean for the metals market then? how does this play out? And also with the metal stocks, because it seems like in a typical, well, I don't want to say seem, it seems typically this would be negative for metals, but yet metals have been, they've been extremely strong here really since last October. And I would even argue much longer since, I mean, gold probably the last few years. And now it looks like the gold and silver equities have really broken out since February. So yeah, what does this mean for all of that?
There's a short-term and long-term answer.
Give me both.
I think, first of all, the yields is going up. The dollar, the manager wants the dollar to go up. And the reason is it's much easier to deal with white currency than several currencies.
Right.
But the Aussie dollar and Canadian dollar, which are commodity currencies, and also BOE, which has at least some resemblance of some governance and normalcy. So there's inclination for the dollar to head down, in fact. But so the manager is trying to prop up the dollar. And that's why I actually favor shorting yields rather than lowering the dollar or shorting the other currencies. Now, on the metals are very underpriced. And that's why you're not seeing the mining companies making money. The likes of silver mining companies still, even though they might gone up double from their low from the start of the year, but they're still 70% from the high. We're entering, so I think the short answer in the medium term is we're entering into a traditionally low seasonality, and that the managers are determined to rally the dollar and the interest is going to go higher. So these are the headwinds for gold and silver in the next 3 to 6 months. And then same with, we also talked about on your show why the mining shares are not going crazy. Metals are all-time high, and yet mining shares are still 40% of what they were, 80% of what they were. As I mentioned to you, it's a depleting business. The reserve that were there 15 years ago, they're not there anymore. The mining equities are managed and manipulated shorter, just like the metals, because they don't want people to see, you know, some peculiarities of why the share is going up, right? And the third is the metal prices are just not, the mining companies are not delivering dividends. And the third is that the metal investors are different from the mining investors, which are retail, American-centric, whereas the metal investors that are buying, they're from the Indias, from the Chinas, from the Russias. And so they're a different set of buyers. So eventually right. We'll converge when mining companies start delivering profit and dividends. So that will have to call for $2,800 gold and around, $40-$50 silver. That's when the fire. If you want to see, you know what, John, where am I going to see First Majestic go back to 27, right? You're going to see $40-$50 silver. And when is the Barricks and Newmont's going to challenge this all-time high? You're going to see $2,800 gold. In the short term, I am a little bit different. If you have a time horizon of 3 to 5 years, I think it's still a great time to buy the metals and the shares. But you have to be able to withstand a correction for gold is around 2050. That's the 200-day moving average. And maybe potentially briefly below that. And the 200-day, the 50-day moving average is around 2330, which is what we are seeing right now. So it's sitting there on the edge, maybe falling over. And if it does, it could go back to 2050 in a hurry. On silver, the 200-day moving average is around 20, I believe, I recall it's around 25 or 24, 25. And the 200-day is, don't quote me on it, I have to look up, I think it's around 23. So the downside for silver is a little more than it's for gold, technically speaking. But then silver, it's got a 30-day critical, used to be critical resistant, which is not a support of $30, right? The journey is still out. I would not be doubling down and taking out leverage to buy right now because it warrants a bit of caution. I would rather buy silver. Let's talk silver for a minute. I would rather buy silver on breakout of 33 than to be buying here at 31, because if you go down below 30, you can see 26 in a hurry in like 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
The challenge in trading silver as I am trading is very, very difficult, because when silver breaks out, you got to be on the pulse, because he could go $4 or $5 in like 2 days, right? But then you can also do a fake breakout. Sometimes the manager will purposely stage a fake breakout by actually buying silver to create that breakout to try to maximize the squeeze. And then they will then sell down if there's no follow through. So it's a very, very difficult thing to time on breakout. unfortunately. And everybody's risk tolerance at that time horizon is very, very different too. Here's the one I would say. If gold managed to, gold that's break down below 50-day moving average to 2330 and head down to 200-day of 2050, 2100, I would embrace gold at 2100 with two hands, with my arms. I would just like I did with treasury, we're a very, very short treasury because technically on the 200-day moving average on the bull market. And then with silver, as I said, I will also be embracing with two arms if silver were to ever go back in $25 to $24 range, which is possible. I would assign it via maybe a 30% probability. And then another 30% probability operating around these levels, around 30 to 28. $30 is the resistance, but they try to spike it down just to induce additional selling, and it's going to make spike up. Very, very difficult market to trade for silver. Sure. My takeaway is I will not plunge all for the technical traders. For the fundamental traders with 3 to 5 year horizon, is still a great buying because gold is only 10-15% from breakout level and silver is broken out at 30 and yet to be seen what's going to happen. So I think we'll be quite happy with the 2 year time horizon. Besides that, real estate market, I would deleverage. I think the 7% yield, I think the mortgage right now is probably 7.5 or 30 year. It's still a good place to, when I first bought my home in 1994, it was 8%, right? And now it's going right back to that. So it's still a good time to, I would not sell my primary home, thinking it's doom and gloom and better be me, you know, in my bunkers. I don't see it that way. but I would deleverage, like I am right now. I used to own over a dozen real estate. So I'm selling down right now. Personal population is decreasing, and the birth rate is dropping, and the mobility of money in speculating by investors globally is not as big appetite. Interest rates are rising, so I just don't see real estate is a good place to be. Rather, I want physicals. That's another thing I recommend. You want physicals because you never know how digital currency is going to pan out, and you don't want to be imprisoned in the voucher system.
Yeah, no, I would agree with all that. In fact, I would not be, it's funny because my family wanted to upgrade our living quarters and our mortgage would double and just because of where interest rates are, my current home interest rate's about 3%. And wow. It just doesn't make any sense. You know, we'll just stick it out in a small house. So,
yeah,
but interesting too, if silver were to get to $24, $25 range and gold to hit about $2,000, $2,100, $2,000, I would mortgage that close to buy more.
So
yes. Oh, I mean, you know, you're a young kid, right? And I'm 50.
Well, I'm your age. I still do it. So
you know, it's just sometimes it's not about a lot of money, it's the stress level, getting what you're passionate about. And
that's true.
You know, I think there's always some point of diminishing return. Try to squeeze the extra penny to, you know, by doing a lot more work, right? And
if you were to do that, you'd look like me, you'd lose all your hair. Well, let's end on that, John. I want to thank you so much for coming on the fly. I really do appreciate that. And I'd love to have you on again as things play out. Shoot me an email or I'll shoot you an email. John, I need you on and we'll talk.
Buy some physicals, Andy. For the first time in 10 years, I started buying physical in 2005. I reloaded in 2015 and I'm buying physicals again. Not because I want to make money, but I can stash it away. You know, there are times where they were shutting out the network ATM in Las Vegas and shutting out electricity in Pakistan. You can go like, who knows how the scenario is going to pan out, right? You want some physicals.
Yeah.
This is a very fragile world. You know, if your phone doesn't work, if your internet doesn't work, if the bank doesn't work, look, if an airplane can disappear in the middle of nowhere, certainly banks can send your money. Your banks are not working. It's not just some black swan event. You got to prepare for that. And so buy some physical and not to speculate and make money, just so you can sleep well. I think that is something that you and Archer have here for the last 20 years. I've never regretted it. I am not going to say, you know what? Fuck, you know, like my condo in Vancouver has gone up three times in price. but yeah, my nettos are only double, right? I don't look at it that way at all. And I think, man, guys on physicals. And when you buy physicals, buy coins. Because with coins, you can only, coins, it's like, analogy is, it's like you're buying steel versus buying Rolex, right? It's not a good analogy, but when you buy numismatics, you're also getting that premium on top of the metals. So you're going to see the spread continue to widen, especially now with the numismatics. American Eagles, Maple Leafs, Cougar Ants, Australian gold coins. I like the Maples because they're 99% as opposed to Eagle, which is 95%. Grab all you can before you can't do that anymore with your digital currency. Your currency is not good to buy it from the Kitcos. They're going to throttle it. Make it a lot easier for them to throttle it. So watch out for that.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, John. Appreciate you having on. And let's chat again.
Yes. Have a good weekend. Coming soon. See you.
Bye-bye.